Hey everybody, welcome to The Family Gamers. This is episode number 59, and as always, it is an odd number podcast, which means we have a guest on the show. We have brought on the show this week Chris Anderson from Blue Cube Board Games. He is somebody that Anitra actually met at Granite Game Summit a few months back, I guess.
Yep, back in the spring.
And so he's come on the show, and he's going to have a conversation with us today. How you doing, Chris?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me.
So I probably should have said, I am your host, Andrew.
I'm Anitra.
And of course, we have Chris on the show as well. So I am going to hand it off to Anitra.
Because you know nothing else about Chris.
I don't know a whole lot.
So I know that Chris is the brains behind Blue Cube Board Games. And I saw some of the stuff that you designed at Granite Game Summit. I also know that you are the host of the Board Game Workshop podcast.
Yes.
And so we figured we'd touch on a little bit of a couple of different aspects. Game design, casual games. You know, if there's anything you want to share with our audience about how to support your local indie game designer.
Sure.
So that's actually a great thing. So, you know, down in Massachusetts, we have obviously the Boston Festival of Indie Games, and then now they have the Connecticut Festival of Indie Games. Mm-hmm. And indie games in general has been really exploding both in the video game space and in the analog space. As a board game designer, I might as well just ask you the question, like, what's your favorite thing about this whole process of really organic games development where you have people that you can reach out to? Because, you know, 15 years ago, these networks didn't exist, right? And the internet wasn't really around, so you couldn't communicate in those ways. So what has happened over the last 5 to 10 years that's really made this whole scene into something that's truly huge?
Well, like you said, the internet has done a ton to improve it, but the community itself is just a lot of really great people that always want everyone to succeed. So since January, I started to really push to get into game design more and start to reach out to different groups. I joined the Game Makers Guild in Boston. They mm-hmm. meet at Emerson twice a month. Mm-hmm. And then started going to more conventions, Granite Game Summit, where I'm at Anitra, and TotalCon is another one I go to often, and Boston Festival of Indie Games. So meeting people through that, someone who I met at TotalCon, who I was actually in a competition with, the board game design contest, he got first place and I got second. I didn't even know he was from Massachusetts. We ended up running into each other, playing some games, and turns out we're both from Southern Mass. So he said he wanted to start up a playtesting group. And now that's been a thing going on monthly or more often. We meet in Norton, and originally it was me, him, another guy, Jim Fitzpatrick, who's had on my podcast, and then we started meeting at a board game shop and playing, testing our games. People are like, oh, what are you doing? They're interested. Oh, I have a game design. And now our Facebook group is something like 20 people, and on some nights we have like 6 to 8 people show up to play test, and it's pretty good. And it's a really interesting industry where everyone wants to help everyone. Like, I've never seen any competition in it. So, because everyone's idea is so unique, you're not fighting over winning this game. It's, I want to make this the best game, and I'll help you make that the best game, and someone else can make the best game. And it's small enough and friendly enough that everyone can win.
So, we've seen at Boston Fig and some other things, you know, we actually mentioned like My Little Scythe on the podcast mm-hmm. a few weeks ago. We've seen a lot of kids working with their parents to kind of create board games or create modifications to board games and things like that. Have you had any experience with seeing kids at any of these testing sessions or anything?
The ones I go to, no, they're usually late at night, and we go to like 10 or 11, so not particularly kid friendly.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
But at the conventions, usually there's plenty of kids around. I've play tested a lot of my games with kids. At BFIG especially, like, that's a huge family event.
Yeah, we love it.
I was in it I want to say 2 years ago, but maybe it was three. I can't remember. But I had had a game, Space Station Disaster. It's a little tile-laying, escape the space station kind of game. Pretty family-friendly.
I think I remember seeing that one.
Yeah. Yeah. That was mine. That was when we really met. But, yeah, tons of families were coming up for that. We had a pile of candy to give out, so that didn't hurt.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good way to get the kids.
Definitely.
But then on the other side, I'm involved with Button Shy Games, and I know, I think one, maybe two games that they're releasing were actually designed with a designer and one of their kids. Hmm. So it's, kids can get into this too. There's no barrier to entry for anyone, really.
Yeah, really. You mentioned Button Shy. I've heard of them before as well. Would you elaborate a little bit on your relationship with them? What do they do?
Sure.
For our listeners who might not know.
Button Shy is an indie game publisher, and they are primarily known for their wallet games, which they do. Last year, they were doing a Kickstarter every month, and they released 12 wallet games, one every month.
Yep.
And the wallet game is it's a little vinyl wallet, like the kind of stuff you'd get up at a dollar store. And every game is 18 cards or less. And then a little rules thing. So they're all micro games in packaging, but some are quite impressive games. Chip Bouvet, who I've talked to on my podcast several times, great guy. He designed Universal Rule, which is a 4X game using 18 cards.
Yeah.
And it seems impossible, but he pulled it off. It's amazing. And the other games they do, it's a huge variety. There's solo games, there's two-player games, there's abstract games, there's, like I said, the 4X game. So they do a ton of that, and they've recently switched this year to doing only a couple of Kickstarters with multiple games, so three games per Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of the wallet games, they also do a Board Game of the Month Club, which is run through their Patreon. So if you sign up for the Patreon at the $5 or $10 level, every month, give or take, depending on the schedule, they send you an envelope, and it has a postcard game in it, which is just a postcard that you usually have to use a standard deck of cards or dice, and you can play some game. And they do those on themes. Last year was cult movies. So they had things like The Room and Big Lebowski and stuff. And then this year they're doing one-hit wonders, so it's like 99 Red Balloons and Spin Me Round, and they're working through that.
I got to test a game that Chip Ove was proposing for that theme, which was based on the Chumbawamba.
Yep, that's coming up soon. So they do one like that, and then also they'll throw in usually like a one or two card expansion to one of their wallet games. So some of them, like Wildcats is one where they just make a new cat and you can expand that game forever. And then in addition, they'll also throw in a nano game if you're at the $10 level, which is where my first game that was ever published in Vino Morte was originally as a nano game. So between the wallet game, the nano game, and the postcard game, they're doing about 36 games a year, which is kind of absurd.
Yeah.
How many people?
We're just thinking.
How many people are involved?
So Jason Tagmeier runs it. It's him, and then he has a couple of people that help part-time, and his family. They assemble them all themselves. Like, it's really, he's proud of it being a mom-and-pop type business, but the amount of work they do is kind of absurd. But it's a lot of fun little stuff, and it's built up a big community, because publishing that many games, he's worked with a lot of different designers. So sure. We have a Slack channel that we talk on and stuff, so it's a great little thing.
You know what's hilarious is Jason Tagmeier and I are Facebook friends.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. Yep, we connected through one of the various Facebook groups of, I don't know, there's
so many
of
them.
So I think we might have to do something around that. We'll see.
Yeah.
So if you could talk a little bit about In Vino Morte, because when Anitra came back from Granite Game Summit, she was like, blah, 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 in wine death. So I'd love to hear from you, like, what the experience was like putting that game together and seeing the responses from people like her who were, you know, crazy about it. I think that's a really interesting thing to kind of see from a developer's perspective what it's like. Like, we, Andy Jeremiah has created a bunch of games, and they've been published through Foxmine, and he's a great friend of the show. And so, you know, we get to work with him and see him, see people get crazy excited about his games. But I think it's always a little bit different for different people. So talk about In Vino Morte, and first of all, what the game is for those people who weren't listening back then.
Yeah, back when I gushed eloquent.
Yeah. Maybe also maybe where people could get a hold of it and what your experience was like with that game.
Sure. So it's a very unique story, so it's interesting. I've told it a couple times. First off, what the game is. It's very simple. In Vino Morte is sort of Latin for in wine there is death. It's a couple of cards. Half of them are wine, half of them are poison. You have a player that's the dealer. They look at the cards, and they choose one card for every person at the table. You can play... depends. We're saying up to 9 people, but you can really play up to as many people as you have cards. You get 3 sets, you can play 30-some-odd people. So you give out these cards face down, and the people do not get to look at them. You've just poured them a glass that is either wine or poison. And then, to the left of the dealer, that first player gets 2 choices. They can either drink their glass, and if it's poison, they're dead, and they're out of the game. If it's wine, they live to try another day. Or they can swap that glass with someone else who hasn't drank their glass yet. And that's it. It goes around the table. Everyone who dies leaves the game, and then you play another round with a new dealer until there's only one person left. It's ridiculously simple. If you've seen The Princess Bride, you understand the yes. type of thinking that you can get into. And so when I designed it, there was a contest for Button Shy for their wallet games, and it was basically make a wallet game and submit it. I ended up designing 10 games for that contest. And one of them was In Vino Morte. I didn't think much about it. I actually never playtested it before I submitted it. It was a very simple idea. There's some wine, there's some poison. People will drink it and die. It worked out conceptually, and I was working on much heavier games for the contest that I did a lot of testing on. None of those games went into the finals. They were interesting to varying degrees, but nothing really stuck. But one of the judges was interested enough in Vino Morte that he took it to the judging day for the other games, not as an entry, but just, oh, you guys should play this game. It's kind of fun. So they played it, and it was interesting enough that Jason contacted me later, separately from the contest, and said that he liked the way I designed small games and would I be interested in working on a nano game for the Board Game of the Month Club. Obviously, I am super excited about that because I'm trying to get into board game design. So I threw around some ideas and then asked if there was anything that I submitted that he was interested in to convert to, because the nano games are 9 cards or less. Mm-hmm. And he said, In Vino Morte looks like it could fit. Basically, from the 18-card wallet game, you cut it in half. You have In Vino Morte, the nano game. So that got released July of last year as the Board Game of the Month. Those are pretty limited releases because it's only the people on the Patreon. And then they have a couple of extras you can buy on the website, which sold out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. It was cool being published, although in a very, very tiny way. And but I was still proud of it and brought it around. I have a couple copies. I play it with my family, which, what the funny thing is, the first time I ever played it was with the final production copy. And it turns out it's really fun and people get into it. It's, I mean, like I said, it's a very, very light game, but it's that kind of late night or between other games. You can just throw some cards out. You can get a round done in a minute, or yeah. you can play for a half hour. Mm-hmm. So
It's definitely the only micro game I've ever seen that is a micro game that's a party game. Like, super quick rounds, doesn't really matter how many people you have as long as you have enough cards to support it. Because you can just, you know, everybody who dies is out, start a new round with less people until you get to the two-player round, which is always entertaining.
As long as you're playing with people who can cope with losing.
Yes. I would probably not play this with... there's at least one of our children who would pitch a fit as soon as he was out.
Every single time. Yep.
Even if they do,
sold,
though.
You kind of sold out who it was, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, so that was exciting. I brought it around. And then while I was at TotalCon, actually almost exactly while I was playing the game with some people, I got a Twitter message from Jason saying that they had some room in a print run. Would I like Invino Morte to become a wallet game? Again, this is not a hard question, obviously. But so it got lucky on a lot of different steps, and just the fact that it's only two different cards, Wine or Poison, it's very easy for them to slide into a print run.
Mm-hmm.
So its convenience has made it succeed, I guess. But so now it'll be a wallet game, and it'll be in their Kickstarter, which should be on August 29th. It's, like I said, they're doing three games at a time now, so I believe the lead game for that is Hero Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Kintsugi and Invino Morte will be in there.
Cool. Oh, well, maybe I'll reach out to Jason. That's fun. I assume this is a game that you would like. You would like to have in the filler collection.
I would like to have it in the filler collection. It amazes me how much fun a game that is basically two cards can
be. And almost complete dumb luck. Almost complete luck.
You start being able to read the group. Like, this person's going to trust me. This person's definitely not going to trust me, so I'm going to give them the opposite of what I want them to have.
We know that we won't trust each other.
Well, that's the thing that comes up. Like, the game itself is nothing. Like, the rules are... the rules literally fit on a single card.
Yeah.
But it's all about the player interaction, which is what I enjoy about all social deduction games. Mm-hmm. The game gets out of the way, and it's, do I trust you? And the answer is always no. I never trust anyone.
Trust no one. Right? Right?
Exactly.
And Invino Morte, optionally better with Vino?
Yeah, sure.
Doesn't hurt.
So we talked a little bit about the board games you've been designing, and Invino Morte, which is the one you've gotten published, and hopefully will be published again. Let's talk a little bit about, you also host a podcast, The Board Game Workshop.
Yes.
So what inspired you to start podcasting?
That's a very good question. I'm not a teacher, technically, but in my professional life, I teach video production. I work at a high school. I run the TV studio. I've been doing that for about 12 years now. So I've always enjoyed teaching, helping people. So I started the podcast because I wanted to give back to the community and also kind of selfishly build my own reputation, because obviously I want people to know who I am. It helps with publishing games. It helps with contacts. But I do generally want to help people and make better games for everyone. So I listen to a lot of podcasts. I have a long commute, so I probably listen to about 10 to 15 hours of podcasts a week. And so that's a medium that I'm very familiar with. I don't have time to read a lot of articles or watch a lot of videos. So podcasting seemed like a natural fit. I originally wanted to start the show as a video show, but the complications of recording video, which even though I do it professionally, it's just a very tedious task to get. Like, I wanted to get people's prototypes in and play them on camera, but that was just too much work. So I ended up going with the podcast and started as an interview show where I would have a designer on, talk about their game, and give some feedback, talk through problems in sort of a workshop type of thing, hence the name of the show.
Sure.
And that's, originally, it was a little too restrictive, so it kind of panned out into just talking about board game design, and I've had numerous guests on talking about their designs. And just recently, our last episode we released, episode 18, we switched to a roundtable format. So I have a couple of designers on, and we talk more about a general topic. And it used to be like a 20-minute show. Now it's an hour. So it's been interesting. I've met a lot of great people. Because of my connections with Button Shy, a bunch of them are also Button Shy designers. But,
makes sense.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. It's a fun time, but it's tough working with the deadlines, as you know.
So, especially now that you've been talking to a lot of other game designers, If someone came up to you and said, I'm really interested in game design, where should I start?
What do you say?
What do you recommend for a,
Step one, listen to podcasts. There are so many good game design podcasts out there. I would definitely recommend Ludology, Breaking Into Board Games, the Board Game Design Lab, mm-hmm. the Board Game Workshop, if you want. But those others are better than mine. There's a ton of other ones I'm forgetting. But podcasts are great. There's a lot of great people giving a lot of information. There's also a ridiculous amount of articles about it. I started designing 3 years ago, and there is so much more information now than there was then. And even then, it wasn't so bad, because people designing 10 years ago had almost nothing to go on. But just like do a search on board game design. You'll come up with tons of stuff. And everything that you watch, read, or listen to will mention other resources to watch, read, or listen to. And just keep going. And eventually, you will not have enough time for all the content you'll be consuming.
So you'll forget all about board game creation? No.
I mean, it can happen if you just like listening. After that, or during that, just start making a game. Your first game's going to be terrible. It might not seem terrible at first, but you will realize it's terrible. You have to get that out of the way, because your next one will be better, and your next one will be better. And just never stop. And then join a community. Like I said, I'm part of the Game Makers Guild of Boston, which that's usually like 20 to 30 people meeting twice a month. We split up into groups, everyone plays their games, get a lot of feedback. If you don't have a group like that in your area, which obviously if you're outside of a major metropolitan area, it's harder to get people together. I'm part of a Discord channel with a couple of other game designers. One of them I met on Twitter. Twitter is a great place for board games. Very friendly. It's not like other parts of Twitter.
That is very true.
So I met him there. He actually offered to do some art for one of my prototypes and then invited me to the Discord channel. So now that's like five or six designers. And I've never met them in real life. They're all across the world. But we can get together. We can show our prototype designs. We can talk through stuff. We have suggestions. Occasionally... Mm-hmm. Try to get stuff together on Tabletopia to play remotely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So basically just start and then look for other people, because everyone in this community is incredibly friendly and they want you to succeed. They will go out of their way to help you. It's kind of absurd the amount of effort people will put in for no gain of their own. They just really want to help.
Well, I mean, the gain is more good board games, right?
Right. Everybody likes a good board game, so...
Hopefully.
That's the idea.
All right. So, we mentioned Indino Morte is hopefully coming to Kickstarter on, what did you say, August 29th?
August 29th should be the starting date for that.
I don't know what the official title is, the board game trifecta from Buttonshite.
It usually goes under the lead game, so I believe Hero Tech is the lead. So, if you search for Hero Tech or Buttonshite, it should come up.
Awesome. So that's going to be August 29th. What else are you doing that we should keep an eye out for?
So right now, I am working on a game called Plutocracy 3022. It is currently a finalist in a Game Crafter contest. So that could work out well. Mm-hmm. But that's what I've been focusing on. So any playtests I go to, I'm bringing that. Trying to get to some conventions. I will be at UnPub next year in March in Maryland. Mm-hmm. I'll be at BFIG. I'm most likely not presenting, although I might be an alternate if someone cancels.
Mm.
Well, we'll be there too.
So. Yeah.
I will definitely be around.
We'll hang out.
Definitely.
All right.
TotalCon also, I'm around there. So it's mostly just going to conventions, working on Plutocracy and the podcast. And, yeah.
So, Plutocracy 3022.
Yes.
That's a mouthful of a name. I'm just kind of curious what the game. Can you talk about the game? Or
I sure can. It's not under anything, so I just talk about it. It's a 4X game, so big space empire type game, but nobody controls any of the empires. There are seven empires fighting for dominance of the galaxy, and you are a plutocrat. You just use your money and influence to manipulate things. So the game is based around manipulating these seven empires to increase their economies. So if you increase one empire's economy, their money is worth more. And you hopefully have a lot of that money. And then you can trade that money in for some other empire's money that is worth nothing. And then build up that other empire and tank the first empire.
And all right.
It's like it's some going well. It's interesting. Game.
Yes, it's come a long way. I'm on version 10. It's only, I think, a couple months, so it's definitely interesting. It's a lot of fun. It's really grabbing people's attention with the unique nobody actually controls anything system, which has made it a pain to design because it's hard to incentivize people. Because if you help one empire, you could be helping your opponent. But it's coming along. It's been great.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting, actually. Maybe you'll bring it with you to Boston Fig.
I will definitely have it on me.
Cool.
All right.
That'll be fun. So what's coming on the next episode of the Board Games Workshop?
That's a really great question.
Sounds like our podcast.
I'm hoping to record it this Wednesday. I got to send out another invite on Twitter. I sent out an invite to my email list, but haven't broadcast it widely yet. My goal is to talk about worker placement and, just get a couple of people together, talk about the ideas of worker placement, where it came from, which worker placement is an incredibly interesting thing to me. I think it's a great place for designers to start because it has a very obvious mechanism of I place a worker, I do a thing, but the variations on that, as we can see from the industry, is kind of unending. So
yeah,
I have completely fallen in love with Zolkin. I love that game.
Oh, it's so good. And that's so mean, and I'm so bad at it, but I love it.
I play a lot of that game on Board Game Arena and get crushed basically every time. But it's a great worker placement game with a big twist to it that makes it really, really
twist.
Ha 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 ha. You're pulling out the dad jokes now.
Hey.
The first time I played that, I did very poorly. And my goal at the end became to end with positive points. I ended with 11, so I was happy.
That works
accurate,
for me. Yeah.
Accurate.
The first time I ever played Zolkin, it was with one of Andrew's coworkers, and
it was also the first time I played, and she crushed me.
But we made it clear from the very beginning of the game. It was a 4-player game, and we're like, okay, so the guy who owns the game and is a super avid gamer, we know before turn one that he is going to win this game.
Yeah.
So really, this is the battle for second place.
Right. And I missed out on second place and third place.
Yes. Yes, you did.
I understand that feeling.
So,
but it was still fun to play.
It's a great game. We don't own Zolkin, and it's really tragic that we don't.
It's probably better that we don't.
So anyway, so I agree with you. I think worker placement is it might be one of my favorite mechanics because I really like to, you know, you were talking about teaching people. I really like to teach people games. And try though I might to get lots of people that are like super into really, really deep games, it's basically impossible. So, if I'm going to get somebody past Ticket to Ride and Settlers of Catan, it's probably going to be a pretty direct worker placement game like Lords of Waterdeep or Agricola or something like that. And I love those games. And they're easy to teach and they're easy to understand. Once in a while we get a friend who wants to play something deeper. And then we go there. But we've at that point we've gone through so many games like Agricola or like Lords of Waterdeep that are these kind of worker placement games that... it's a genre that it's so easy to tie a really strong theme to a worker placement game.
Yep.
That I really like them a lot.
Fair enough.
So I'm with you. I am now extremely excited for your Wednesday show. No pressure.
I hope it happens. But that should be, we'll record this Wednesday and I'll release it next Wednesday. So there'll be something out next Wednesday. Might not be worker placement. It might be me talking alone, but there'll be something.
Well, we're aiming to give you some practice at you talking alone. Or something.
All right. He is Chris Anderson, and he is a designer for Button Shy Games, and he is the owner/editor/everything for the podcast Board Games Work, the Board Game Workshop. So, Chris, how can people get a hold of you? How can, if people are listening to this and they really want to hear more about what kinds of things you're doing, because you're doing about a million things, where can they find you?
Easiest place to get me is on Twitter. I'm at BlueCubeBGS because Twitter doesn't give you enough letters. Also, my website, BlueCube Board Games, is updated occasionally. There's a bunch of print and plays on there of older stuff, if anyone's interested in checking that. But mainly Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And we look forward to seeing Plutocracy 3022 coming to, I don't know, on-demand publishers near us sometime soon. Whatever it is.
Perhaps.
All right. Well, thanks so much again, and have a great night.
Well, thank you. You too.